Frank the Irishman. Sheeran claimed to be the man who killed Jimmy Hoffa, Teamsters' kingpin, mob associate, and America's most famous missing person. For decades, Hoffa's disappearance has haunted the country, spawning books, excavations, FBI cover-ups, and even Hollywood myths. But Sheeran's confession, made near death and immortalized in Martin Scorsese's The Irishman, raised a chilling possibility that the truth had always been right there in front of us, hiding behind a working man's stare. But how much of what Sheeran said is fact, and how much is mob fiction? Did he really paint houses with bullets? Was Hoffa truly buried beneath a Detroit house? Or did Sheeran just tell a story America was desperate to believe? And why did it take so long for the FBI to take him seriously? This isn't just a story about a murder. It's about loyalty, betrayal, and the terrifying power of a lie told often enough to become legend. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Irishman. Blood, brotherhood, and the road to Hoffa. Frank Sheeran was not a man who looked like a killer. Towering, yes, he stood 6'4", a brute of a man with heavy jowls and cold eyes. But there was something quietly unassuming about him. A Teamsters Union official, a veteran of World War II, a blue-collar bruiser with a rusted-out pickup and a pension. But Sheeran also lived two lives. One in broad daylight, where he moved trucks, shook hands, and negotiated labor contracts. And the other in shadow, where he claimed he painted houses, a euphemism for murder, the paint being blood splattered on the walls. By the time Sheeran gave his deathbed confessions to former prosecutor Charles Brandt, he was an old man drowning in guilt, or so it seemed. Their taped interviews, later compiled into the book I Heard You Paint Houses, laid out a stunning narrative. That Sheeran was the man who shot his longtime friend, Jimmy Hoffa, in a Detroit house on July 30th, 1975. According to Sheeran, it was the culmination of years of mob service, hits carried out on orders from Russell Bufalino, a quiet don who controlled much of the East, coast rackets from his perch in Pennsylvania. But was any of it true? To understand Sheeran's alleged involvement in Hoffa's disappearance, one must first understand who Frank Sheeran really was. Born in Camden, New Jersey in 1920, Sheeran was of Irish-American descent and enlisted in the U.S. Army at age 21. During World War II, he served more than 400 days of combat in Italy and France, a staggering number. He later claimed these brutal years desensitized him to killing. "You learned to follow orders," he said in one interview. "You learned to shut off your conscience." After the war, Sheeran drifted. He worked as a truck driver, hauling meat and other goods up and down the eastern seaboard. It was during this time that he crossed paths with Russell Bufalino, a man who would alter the course of his life. Bufalino was known as the Quiet Don, a man with few words and countless connections. From heroin importation to union manipulation, Bufalino pulled strings across New York, Pennsylvania, and New Jersey. And he saw something in Sheeran. Their friendship began with small favors, running errands, intimidating competitors, fixing disputes. But soon, Sheeran graduated to something darker. Murders, allegedly. "You don't call them hits," Sheeran would later say. "You're just asked to do a favor." The euphemisms were thick in mob culture. No one said, "kill." They said, "paint a house." Sheeran's rise mirrored that of the American labor movement's most infamous figure, James Riddle Hoffa. Born in Indiana in 1913, Hoffa was a labor organizing prodigy. By his 30s, he had become the voice of the working man, and by the 1950s, he had turned the International Brotherhood of Teamsters into one of the most powerful unions in the world. But his influence came at a cost. Hoffa welcomed the mob into the union's inner sanctum. The mafia saw an opportunity. The Teamsters' pension fund, a multi-billion dollar cash reservoir ripe for investment, loans, and laundering. Casinos in Las Vegas, construction projects, payoffs. Hoffa's relationships with mob bosses like Anthony Tony Pro, Provenzano, and Russell Bufalino weren't hidden. They were necessary. But the FBI watched closely, and by 1967, Hoffa was convicted of jury tampering, fraud, and bribery. Still, even behind bars, Hoffa remained a force. President Nixon commuted his sentence in 1971 under one condition. Hoffa could not return to union activity. Hoffa ignored that. He wanted back in. He was determined to regain the Teamsters' presidency, and he didn't care who stood in the way. That's where Frank Sheeran re-enters the picture. According to Sheeran, his relationship with Hoffa was deep. "He was like a brother to me," Sheeran told Brandt. Hoffa trusted Sheeran more than most, so much so that when Sheeran showed up to drive Hoffa to a meeting on July 30th, 1975, the Teamsters' boss didn't hesitate. But here's where the story takes a darker turn. Sheeran claimed that instead of taking Hoffa to a meeting with mobsters, he drove him to a house in a quiet Detroit suburb. Once inside, Sheeran said he walked a few steps behind Hoffa, pulled a gun from his waistband, and shot him twice in the back of the head. Execution style. No warning, no argument. Just silence. "I had to do it," Sheeran said. "It was what it was." He claimed Hoffa's body was cremated at a nearby mob-connected funeral home, erasing all physical evidence. The house where the killing occurred was later identified by independent journalists and the FBI. Blood traces found in the floorboards were inconclusive, but they matched the general timeline. Still, the FBI has never charged Sheeran with Hoffa's murder, and many experts remain skeptical. Why would Sheeran kill his closest friend? His answer: loyalty. Loyalty to Bufalino. To the life. If Hoffa kept pushing back into union leadership, it could expose the mob's control over the pension fund. "Hoffa didn't understand," Sheeran claimed. "They weren't going to let him back in. He couldn't be told." The story makes for cinematic drama. That's why Martin Scorsese's The Irishman, based on Brandt's book, hit so hard. De Niro as Sheeran, Al Pacino as Hoffa, Joe Pesci as Bufalino. It was a murder mystery dressed in loyalty, regret, and grey morality. But Hollywood isn't evidence. Critics of Sheeran's account point out that it conveniently absolves him from deeper scrutiny. He admits to crimes, but only the ones that make for a good story. Others believe Sheeran was manipulated by Brandt or sought fame in his final days. "He was a sick man," said one FBI agent. "He wanted to be remembered, and the Hoffa case gave him that." But the circumstantial evidence is troubling. Phone records show Sheeran in Detroit on July 30th. Bufalino had allegedly ordered him to cancel a family trip to deliver a message. Hoffa's son, James P. Hoffa, who later became president of the Teamsters, never believed Sheeran's story. "My father would never have gotten into that car," he said. "He knew better." And yet, Sheeran knew things he shouldn't have. The way he described Hoffa's demeanor, the house, the carpet, the silence. He described the act without glorifying it. He didn't brag, he mourned. And that's what makes the confession so hard to dismiss. The FBI, for its part, remains officially undecided. In 2003, agents searched a Detroit home matching Sheeran's description, pulling up floorboards and walls. Traces of blood were found, but the DNA had degraded. No charges were filed, no body was found, and Hoffa remains a ghost. In the end, Frank Sheeran died in 2003, alone and haunted. Was he Hoffa's killer? Or just another aging wise guy desperate to leave his mark? Maybe the better question is, why are we so desperate to believe him? Chapter 2. Truth in Blood. The Last Days of Hoffa and the Irishman. By the time Frank Sheeran confessed to killing Jimmy Hoffa, America had spent nearly 3 decades speculating. Theories ranged from outlandish to plausible. Hoffa buried under Giant Stadium, dissolved in acid by the mob, or hidden in the Florida Everglades. But Sheeran's account in I Heard You Paint Houses cut through the noise with a brutal simplicity. He betrayed a friend because the life he chose demanded it. No fanfare, just 2 bullets, a burned body, and silence. But silence, as it turned out, spoke volumes. Let's return to July 30th, 1975, the day Hoffa vanished. Hoffa had scheduled a lunch meeting at 2:00 p.m. at the Machus Red Fox restaurant in Bloomfield Township, a suburb north of Detroit. He told his wife, Josephine, that he was meeting Anthony Tony Pro Provenzano, a known Genovese family capo and former ally turned enemy, and Anthony Giacalone, a Detroit mobster with deep union ties. Witnesses said Hoffa waited in the parking lot for nearly 30 minutes before he got into a maroon Mercury Marquis and vanished. His car keys, briefcase, and lunch remained behind. The FBI's early investigation immediately focused on known mob figures, but the mob closed ranks. No one talked, not even whispers. Over the years, various informants hinted at different disposal methods: burned in a trash incinerator, buried in a New Jersey landfill, shipped to Japan in a crushed car. But nothing solid ever surfaced. Then came Sheeran. His narrative provided not just a killer, but a motive, method, and means. He said Russell Bufalino orchestrated the hit to eliminate Hoffa once and for all. Hoffa's return to the Teamsters threatened to expose decades of illegal loan schemes, kickbacks, and political bribes. In short, Hoffa knew too much, and he couldn't stop talking. According to Sheeran, the plan was this: he would drive Hoffa to a safe house under the pretense of a meeting. There, Hoffa would be killed by someone he trusted. Sheeran, who had worked for Hoffa for years and protected him from previous threats, was perfect. If it was anybody else, Sheeran said, he would have seen it coming. In Sheeran's version, Hoffa entered the empty house, became suspicious, and turned to ask what was going on. That's when Sheeran pulled the trigger. 2 shots to the back of the head. Hoffa collapsed. No struggle, no last words. Sheeran claimed he left the house, and others took care of the cleanup and cremation. But here's where the cracks begin to show. First, there's no hard evidence. The FBI did search the house Sheeran described, owned at the time by a known mob associate. Blood was found under floorboards, but DNA testing was inconclusive. Without a body, the DOJ never filed charges. Second, the timeline is hazy. While Sheeran was in Detroit that week, and his flight records prove he left for a meeting with Bufalino afterward, the details remain circumstantial. No one saw Hoffa get into Sheeran's car. No security cameras, no forensics, just words. Third, multiple other mobsters have claimed knowledge of Hoffa's fate, with details that conflict with Sheeran's. In 1982, Charles Allen, a convicted mobster and former Hoffa bodyguard, turned informant, claimed Hoffa was killed on orders from New Jersey mob boss Anthony Provenzano and buried in an undisclosed location. In 2001, mob associate Richard Kuklinski, dubbed the Iceman, claimed he was one of the hitmen. None of these accounts matched Sheeran's. All were disputed. All added layers of fog. Still, Sheeran's version endures. Why? Because it feels right. His guilt, his pain, the details, the sense that he carried this secret like a noose around his neck. Sheeran didn't sell the story as a boast. He described the killing like a confession, not for absolution, but for understanding. And then came Scorsese. Theories and conspiracies deconstructing the Scorsese version. When The Irishman premiered on Netflix in 2019, it reignited a decades-old mystery with fresh fire. Directed by Martin Scorsese, starring Robert De Niro as Sheeran, Al Pacino as Hoffa, and Joe Pesci as Bufalino, the film embraced Sheeran's account wholesale. It wasn't just a dramatization, it was a declaration. Scorsese's film stretches across decades, mapping Sheeran's rise, moral erosion, and eventual collapse into loneliness and remorse. In the film's climactic moment, Sheeran shoots Hoffa as described, twice in the back of the head. The scene is stripped of glamour. No music, no slow motion, just the horrifying intimacy of betrayal. But critics and law enforcement officials were quick to question the accuracy. One former FBI agent said bluntly, "We followed Sheeran for years. He was never a primary suspect. He wanted to matter." Others point to inconsistencies in "I Heard You Paint Houses." Dates don't line up. Names are conflated. Some facts are impossible to verify. There's also the Brandt factor. Charles Brandt, the author who transcribed Sheeran's confession, was accused by skeptics of editorializing, filling in blanks, smoothing rough edges, and presenting speculation as memory. The cinematic quality of the account, tight arcs, poetic irony, moral clarity, feels more like crafted narrative than confession. And yet, the FBI never ruled it out. Why? Because too much did line up. Sheeran's proximity to Hoffa, his role as a trusted enforcer, his ties to Bufalino, his travel records, even the house. So what if it was true? What if the last man Hoffa saw before dying was his closest friend? What if the mob, in its cold efficiency, used loyalty as a weapon? What if Sheeran was the killer, not because he hated Hoffa, but because he loved him too much to let someone else do it? It's this tension between truth and myth that gives The Irishman its power, and it's what keeps Frank Sheeran's name in the conversation today. Legacy, lies, and the truth that died with them, Frank Sheeran, died in 2003, buried with military honors in Pennsylvania. At his funeral, few knew the full scope of his life. Fewer still understood the weight he carried. He left behind four daughters, one of whom later said she believed he wanted peace in his final days. But peace is hard to find when the truth is still buried. Jimmy Hoffa was declared legally dead in 1982. His body has never been found. His family never received closure. His union, once the most feared labor force in the country, was rebuilt under new leadership. The pension fund was restructured, but the shadow of Hoffa's disappearance still looms. So did Frank Sheeran kill Hoffa? The truth may never be known with certainty. What we have is a confession, a book, a movie, and a million questions. What we have is a story about friendship, violence, power, and how even the most intimate relationships can be weaponized. In the end, perhaps the most haunting element is this. Hoffa trusted Sheeran, enough to get in the car, enough to walk into a house without hesitation, enough to believe that the rules of the underworld didn't apply to them. But they did. And the blood, if Sheeran's account is to be believed, didn't just paint the walls of that Detroit house, it painted an entire era in American history, an era when loyalty was currency, silence was survival, and power was always personal.